I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Welcome to Audible Interlude, a G.I. Joe podcast. I am your host, Dave West, codename Phantom Troublemaker.
And I am your codename. I'm your co-host, Noel Wood, codename Crapshoot.
And I'm your Cobra intern that's more of a Jeeper Creeper than a Hound Dog, codename Legion Cub.
I am your codename sounds like a Tin Machine song.
Codename. I should have, that's what I should have picked as my code name when we started this. Codename.
Follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. Click that follow button, subscribe to wherever it is, whether it's iTunes or Spotify or wherever. And be sure you leave a 5-star review and share the show. When you hear an episode you like, when you watch a video you enjoy, share it to the socials, tell the people about it, because that's the only way that we can grow. Follow us on Instagram at Audible Interlude Podcast. While you're there, check out the pinned stories. Go to our TeePublic store and get yourself some merch. We've got hats and shirts and shorts and all kinds of different stuff. So when TeePublic has one of its frequent sales, go in there and get yourself some merch. If we see you wearing Audible Interlude merch out at a show, we'll get you some swag. You can catch us live on the Needless Things YouTube channel. Our next live stream is March the 2nd. Put it on your calendar. You can also check out a bunch of toy reviews there. This week, Hit and Run and Lifeline both went up. Next week, the Dark Reaper from Operation Recall, as well as three other reviews that I have not determined yet because stuff is shipping. But also there's a few things that I really need to get around to that I just haven't. I've got a footmobile I need to review. I've got She-Ra and Swiftwind that I need to review from like months ago. So lots of stuff always on the Needless Things YouTube channel. You can also join the Audible Army Facebook group to hang out and really just enjoy your time with our newly appointed moderator, Rex Ship. He's already on top of things in there. Good content, good notifications about sales, pre-orders, all that kind of stuff. If you were in the Audible Army Facebook group, those links for Ninja Force Zartan were up the second they were available on the day that he went up for pre-order. So that's an advantage of being in that group. Check out our most recent live stream on the Needless Things YouTube channel, where we talk about all the reveals from Toy Fair. And then there is a Needless Things podcast live stream that is out now as you're listening to this, probably happening, that you can watch, where we talk about all the non-Joe stuff that we thought was really cool. But tonight, we're here to talk about G.I. Joe number 19 from Skybound's Energon universe. There will be spoilers ahead. Now, did you guys notice that this is one of the... We seem to get three different varieties of review copies of the comic. We'll get some that are like basically just the full final version of the comic, but that have that Skybound watermark down the middle. We'll get some that are like missing the cover, all the back pages and everything, and have the watermark. And then we'll get ones like this that are missing parts, have the watermark, and have not final, do not share across the middle of the entire comic, making it quite frankly, a little difficult to read. Now, look, yeah. I don't want to sound ungrateful. I love the fact that we're able to read and review these comics that Skybound provides these to us. It's awesome. But it is a little bit more of a chore when you're having to squint through. You know what we need, guys?
Tech spec reader?
Yes.
That's what I was thinking the whole time. I was like, man, yes. I should bring up my tech spec reader and I could see through this red.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're going to have to get some of those and we'll be good to go. All right. So anyway, part of what was missing from this one was an actual credits page. But if you look online, you can see our writer is Joshua Williamson. Artist Andrea Milana back for this one. Nice to see that artwork again, because I don't believe we've seen it since the Cobra Commander miniseries. There could have been a couple of fill-in issues that I'm not thinking of, but it was nice to see that work again. Colorist Lee Loughridge and letterer Russ Wooten. Recap of recent events. Hawk is actually Zartan, and Duke knows about Clutch and Hound's secret relationship. What's going to happen next?
I love this cover. I'm sure that multiple covers, you know, are out there, but we only got the one because I see Hound and Duke butting their heads together like my cat and I do when he's, you know, when he's feeling affectionate. He rubs his little hat, his head on my forehead like that.
Well, this certainly is not affection, but I do love that it fits in with what we know of Skybound's Duke, is that he's not going to back down. It does not matter if a robot 10 times his size is in his face. He's going to headbutt it. He's going to get right up in its face and be angry. I really love this cover. And then, of course, Clutch between them trying to break it up. Great cover. Tells the story. You know, sometimes covers are just really cool splash art. But sometimes they are a little bit of a summary of the core events of a comic. And in this case, it's the latter. So getting into the story, we've got Hawk's face, but it looks eerily hollow. What's going on there? And then we get another shot where it's like melting. And yeah, I couldn't quite figure out what we're looking at here. Is it just different Hawk masks? Like the
That's
one
what
that
I was
got,
thinking.
Well, because he tore that one off in pieces, though. So this isn't yeah, the one from the reveal.
No, I figured these are, because we'll get to it. He kind of makes a comment about
right
needing Energon for this. So I am thinking that
it's like Darkman,
the masks like decay over time, no matter what.
Right, it's like Darkman.
Well, yeah, and I was thinking that there's something like maybe biomechanical about these masks, and yes, they do require Energon to run, and, you know, if he's low on Energon, he can't keep these hyper-realistic disguises up.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of what I surmised. Well,
and this page brings up something, because what we're looking at is a couple of the Hawk masks and Zartan having a conversation, and it looks like a little piece of Energon suspended in some kind of container. But something that I had never even thought of is Zartan was the first one to discover Energon on Earth. He has a relationship with it. He has a backstory that we don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't thought about that till I read this page. Because
He was hinted at in the Cobra Commander
right
miniseries, but he right wasn't pictured. So when I think of the Dreadnoks and their relationship to Energon, it's kind of like, well, the first thing that pops into my head are you know, the Dreadnoks that we've seen. So I shouldn't have been surprised that Zartan needs the Energon, but it was kind of a surprise.
Well, and okay, so check this out. We're talking about Joshua Williamson, and we have been nothing short of blown away by the construction of G.I. Joe and the Energon universe, the way the story is being told. But just to get a feel for what this guy is doing, here are the comic books just in February that Joshua Williamson wrote. Nightwing, Batman, Wait, hang on. I got to zoom in a little bit here. I'm sorry. Night Fight, which is a Batman comic. Oh, some of these are second printings, but this is still crazy. DCKO, G.I. Joe, Iron Man, and Superman. So that's not like, okay, so it's a total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five comics, five full-length comics in February. And that's not, you know, a big mainstream comic, an independent comic, and three passion projects. This is five top-tier titles in February alone. That's crazy. What a workhorse this guy is. So anyway, this first page, just really, really cool. And is another moment where we're reminded there's so much we still haven't seen and don't know about the past of this Energon universe, let alone the future. And again, that's just great storytelling. So Zartan is, yeah, he mentions he needs that Energon to keep doing what he's doing. And he has G.I. Joe and Cobra's files. So this also lets us know that he's not aligned with either of them. He's his own person. Yeah. He's got his own thing going on.
Well, and you have to wonder too, is it possible that he is, like, we might have seen him at some point without realizing it was him in a Cobra disguise at some point in time?
Sure.
In
this. Absolutely. So then we get a nice two-page spread of Zartan fully revealed for the first time, saying the hunt for Energon begins now. And this is just an update of his traditional costume. Looks cool. It's very skybound-y, you know? It falls in line with the way they do things. And he's looking at an image of the globe that has a bunch of crosshairs on it, marking out, in all likelihood, Energon activity. Because we've seen this kind of thing before. But I'm very interested to know where this control room is. Is this under the pit? Is this somewhere different?
Oh, I just assumed it was in the pit, but
yeah, I assume the same. He's probably, you know, there's some top secret.
Ballsy if he's in the pit with these masks sitting around, like it's at the very least, it has to be a secret room somewhere.
Well, yeah, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure there's some like very top secret quarters for the commanding officer of G.I. Joe. So,
and an interesting thing I noticed here is if you look at the right half of the page, there's some stairs under that globe and there's cabling just going down the stairs. So it really seems like this is something he set up and not like you don't leave cables like that just on the stairs.
Right.
So it makes it seem put together.
I just figured he didn't want to pay for cable in multiple rooms. So he's just got a splitter and he's pirating it.
So next page over, now we've got the, and it's funny because we had the last issue that was completely separate from most of this. And it's like, oh, right. Our Joes are still just in the desert after the Dreadnought War, with Duke staring Hound down and,
well, staring him up, I guess you could say.
Well, yeah, you're right. You're right. So we're still in the desert and Duke is up and full of beans. But Stalker, which I love that, because obviously the easy thing here would have been Clutch immediately as the in-between guy, as he was on the cover of the comic. But rather than giving him that role, they give Stalker something to do. They build Stalker's character a little more. He's the cooler head. He's the sort of guy who's been around longer and is like, well, hold on, wait a minute. Let's see what's going on here. I really like that they're spreading the character roles out.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and he's focused on this mission. We need to get out of here. We can work all this out back at home.
Right. We don't need to do this in the middle of the hostile desert. And then So we've got Clutch trying to explain himself a bit and agreeing with Stalker. And then Risk, freaking Risk, who just keeps being like slightly more reasonable and acceptable with each issue as it goes. Because he's vouching for Hound here, and we're having to hear Risk and agree with him again, which is just so irritating.
Yeah, but we have to hear him say this robo dude Hound, and you know, I roll my eyes that.
Well, and that's what it is it's like what he's saying the audience agrees with, but the way he's saying it, he's still like fingernails on a chalkboard.
So am I the only one, or have any of you guys, since the reveal, like since the clarification that yes, Hawk is Zartan, Hawk is the one who brought Risk to the team. Zartan then, or was he Hawk? Hawk knew of Risk and actively sought him out. So now I have so many more questions about Risk than I did before, that I was picking apart every little thing he said in this issue. I don't think they're going to pull a Judas contract on us with him, because we've kind of had that. But man.
Well, and it's already been announced that they're going into Risk's backstory. I think it maybe is issue 22, if I'm remembering correctly.
Okay.
But they put out a press release, you know, finally, Risk's story revealed, or whatever
the,
it is.
The story that nobody was really asking for.
Oh, I think that's because even if you don't like him, you still want to know, like, what's this guy's deal? So I think we were asking for it, whether we realized it or not. You know, I want to know what's going on with this guy.
Wait, what issues were the Snake Eyes Unmasked issues? Are they trying to coincide numerically with those?
Well, since we all know Risk will eventually be Snake Eyes, I mean, obvious.
Right.
Hey, look, audience, you might laugh, but we were right about Hawk. Like, way early. So Duke is right to be mad, and Hound is a good guy, and that's again how this story is good, is we have two opposing points of view that are both correct, and it gets you more invested in these characters. But I will say Duke is being pretty he's not being racist, he's being speciesist. Because he's definitely looking at Cybertronians as a monolith and not taking them individually.
He just hates those clankers is what it is.
Duke is just furious, and he spins around like he's about to fire a shot at Hound, which is just not a good idea, Duke. You've seen enough of this guy to know that ain't going to work out for you. But fortunately, Clutch goes for the big tackle, and Duke feels betrayed, and as easy as it would be to say, well, he's being a big baby, he's not. Like, I get it. Clutch had the best intentions, but he did lie and betray Duke, or lie to and betray Duke.
I still have a hard time with the lie. Only because
omission is lying.
But nobody ever blatantly,
take it to court, Christian.
Nobody ever blatantly asked him. The question never came up. Did
That's
he hide
omission.
Him? Sure.
That is deception. That is dishonesty. Ask a judge. but yes, he had the best intentions. We get this really great heartfelt speech about, you know, how difficult this was for Clutch. And he's gotten to know this guy. And our last panel on that page is this just look of desperation. Hound is a G.I. Joe.
Which that just, Clutch. As soon as I read that, I was like, oh,
right.
No, 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 no.
Not gonna like that
thing.
Duke is so angry about this that it looks like his skin is like ripping off of his body in the next panel.
It almost looks like Akira or something.
Yeah,
weird stuff happening to him. And he says, "No robot will ever be a Joe, not as long as I'm breathing." Which my first like kind of silly overreactive thought to that was, "Oh, I guess Duke's gonna die." That's gonna I don't think he is, but it just popped into my head of like, that's a statement, and we've got a pretty good chance of a robot at some point in the Energon universe being a Joe.
Well, what if Duke dies and comes back as Robo Joe, and ironically he's the first robot Joe?
Blew my mind. Amazing. I'm gonna say this right now. Skybound. If Joshua Williamson ever needs a break, which good Lord, at some point he's clearly going to, you get this man right here, Noel, to write a fill-in issue, and he will rewrite the world and leave a terrible mess for Mr. Williamson to have to clean up. But that's okay. Sometimes you got to shake things up. And I'm going to be so mad, like, because that also is a very big statement, not just within the context of the Energon universe, but within the context of fandom, to say Hound is a Joe, right? That has a significance to fans, to us reading this, of like, oh, that's an interesting concept, a Transformer that is part of the Joe team. And it also, again, led me to think, like, I'm going to be so mad if they release like a red Hound and call it Skybound to like go, you remember the red series Transformers?
Yeah.
They were great figures. They didn't transform, but they're really good figures. But if they do something like, really, if they do anything other than a crossover, you know, like they've been doing with the O-rings, it's just not acceptable. That's why you can still buy the Void Rivals set on Pulse. It's because that's not what people want. People want transforming Transformers to go with their O-ring Joes. And once you've let that, you can't put that toothpaste back in the tube, right? Hasbro has already said we can make transforming Transformers that work with G.I. Joes. And to then go and say, well, here's one that does or that doesn't accommodate Joe figures. You can't do that. It's ridiculous. You can't take a step backwards like that.
Anyway. But if any Transformers, especially for us, you know, old 1984 Transformers fans, was going to become a Joe, it had to be Hound, right? Hound. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I fantasized about that 40 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I want Hound to Hound. I don't want Vamp Hound. I would buy Vamp Hound, don't get me wrong. But I want Hound to look like Hound looks, because it's something cool and different, but it would still fit really well into the Joes.
That would also probably require some licensing from Chrysler to get the
deep. I think you could fake it out a little bit. But also, they've licensed stuff. I mean, look, that Sky Striker is licensed. The Ecto is licensed. You know, they do that. Yeah. So it can happen. So anyway, the Joes finally come to agreement. Well, at the very least, we got to get out of the desert. And Duke says, Hound is under arrest.
Duke. Like,
do you have handcuffs that are going to fit this guy? Come on.
Like, what he says.
We know of Duke, it makes sense, because he is beyond, at this moment, he is beyond rational thought, or what we think is rational thought.
Well, but he's not, because in the next panel he says, if Hound is as good as you say, he'll come in without a fight. I mean,
That's what I'm saying. It comes across that way, because even in the next panel, when he's like, you know, Sarker, CoverGirl, take them in. When CoverGirl says, take them where? And he's like, to the pit. I was like, I think I'm on board with CoverGirl. I wasn't thinking, like, this isn't an actual question, Duke. This is rhetorical. Where do you take a giant robot at any point? If Hound wants to be like, pink, pink, pink. Okay, right. I'm walking away. He can.
But again, that's the point, is if he is a good guy, then he's going to go along with this and we'll get some answers. And also, we do need to point out, this whole entire time, Duke, still no shirt. Good for him. And then we get a little interstitial, which is very exciting, but took me a minute to figure out. So we get a header on the page that says, weeks ago. And we flash back to Hound and Clutch at some kind of hovel out in the desert. And it took me a minute to remember, like, oh, that's Matt Tracker. Mm-hmm. Or to, I guess not even to remember, to recognize that's Matt Tracker.
Well, and I have to, because I did not ever get a hand, get my hands on the Free Comic Book Day Energon Universe book where he was introduced. So I recognize Matt Tracker pretty much immediately from his costume. But I have no idea of like what actual things happened in that. So I presume that there was an encounter at some point in time with Matt Tracker and
Noel, you Legend. Didn't listen to our review?
Did you review that one?
I don't think we did, actually.
We did, didn't we? Wasn't it one that Noel missed? We've reviewed all the Energon specials.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I missed it.
But
I might have decided to miss it if I didn't want to get spoiled. So maybe that was why I made a choice at that time. But who knows? It says weeks ago.
A year ago.
That was almost a year ago.
Well, it would have been, it would have been in May, because that would have been Free Comic Book Day. Anyway, Matt Tracker watches, because we didn't see this part of it. We saw Clutch and Hound leave, but then that was the last we saw of Matt Tracker at the time. He watches them leave and is a little frustrated by what just happened, grabs a few personal belongings from the little makeshift headquarters he's got out here in the desert, and then blows it up. And I have to say, like, if he's been hiding out here, and nobody has found him, wouldn't it have been better to just take his stuff and leave and not blow it up?
But
because blowing it up is, somebody saw that.
Sure, but
now they're going to presume he's dead.
Somebody did find him. Clutch found him, even though he was trying to be
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah, you're right, you're right.
So,
yeah.
You can he's probably hoping, okay, they think that I'm dead in this blast, but...
Well, I don't, you know, I don't even know if he's thinking that. He's just thinking of it, got to destroy any trace.
Yeah.
So they can't follow me from this point. And that, you're right. I hadn't thought of that. Oh, well, Clutch found him, obviously. So it's not really even about, like, I need to find a new place. It's about, like, my cover here is blown. Yeah. I got to move on. And we get this really great sequence.
According to the next four panels, he goes to Orlando and visits Epcot and goes drinking around the world.
And he's there for a few days, as you need to be, because he changes outfits a couple times.
Yes.
Well, look, I don't know how old Matt Tracker is, but you do get to a certain point where you can't drink around the world in a single day. So I get it. You got to space it out. It's a really great sequence of panels that shows him traveling the world clearly over a decent period of time. Today we get the flash forward to where we are with the characters in the story right now. And he's out in the middle of a forest in a pretty neat looking little camper situation.
I was thinking that he is taking on the role of, Chris Farley as, I can't remember the character name.
Oh,
living in a van down by the river.
Matt Foley. Yeah. So it is a Matt. So I connected my computers up and monitored the situation in the world in a van down by the river. So he's out here in the middle of the forest, gets an incoming message, recognizes the channel, and the message that pops up is new information on Mayhem, must meet ASAP, secure location. It says better be good. And I think if I'm remembering correctly, Miles Mayhem was in Transformers 25. Is that where we saw him?
He has been in 25 and 26. Pretty big moment in 26.
Okay. So back to the pit. And everybody is back home. Stalker's getting out of the sort of awe-striker-ish thing. And I like that we get a moment that shows that Baroness and CoverGirl still have a rapport.
Well, and we got that a little bit earlier, too, when they were in the desert. Because, you know, Baroness is like, this is the first I've heard of this. And CoverGirl's just like, same. So, yeah, you know, you can tell they're kind of besties now.
Well, that's what happens after you stab each other in the back, literally.
As part of Duke's freak out, you know, he said, are you all keeping secrets from me? And Baroness is like, well, I'm not. I didn't know about this. Like, it's there was some good stuff there that we kind of passed over just because this is, it's interesting. This felt to me like a bit of a breather issue because it is kind of a low action issue. But also, so much happens story-wise. So even though it's not action-packed, it still feels like a loaded, fast-paced issue.
Yeah, and we have like a couple of different like non intertwining stories going on right now too, which is kind of keeping it interesting because at this point in time, what's happening between the Joes and what's happening with between Matt Tracker and really even Zartan to a certain point are all kind of their own separate arcs.
Yeah, that's a good point. That also is what makes the pace of this issue feel a little bit more because we are doing jumping between completely unrelated things. So we're getting it's a refreshing,
but yet
switch up
in a weird way connected because also in this scene, so we get more great personality dialogue from Stalker. Like I so much enjoyed Stalker in this issue and them, you know, giving him so much to do. But, you know, he's recognizing that, you know, without saying it, like Cobra has lasers. They don't. Like, they're constantly outmanned. They're outgunned. They're getting their butts kicked every single time they go out there. And everything he is saying is making logical sense. And then Zartan Hawk, man, you know,
we got to go back to Risk, which is who Stalker is responding to.
Oh yeah.
With all of this, where Risk says we're due a little time off. And then he goes into this nice to party, relax, get a massage. And I'm like, what did you sign up for? What is this? And look, I'm not saying he's wrong to feel that way, but it does come off like after the string of failures that the Joe team has had, it does come off as a little like you haven't earned that.
Well, and it's kind of now that I've heard Christian's take on this, it's making me wary of what his motives are. If so, right. He's like, nah, we just need to, you know, I'm the guy who likes to go out there and run hard all the time, but yeah, I just need a massage right now.
Well, and you know what?
Who else? Got introduced to Roadblock. He wants to have a cheesy day and get a body massage.
Who else that we know of is just there to get paid and to party? I mean, that's a Dreadnought sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm not saying I don't think this is like Xandar or anything like that, but just interesting. Just things to food for thought, if you will. Hawk from Stalker is talking about like, look, we need better weapons. We need support. We need more people on this team so we can finally get ahead. And then from off panel, we get not yet Stalker and you turn the page and you see Hawk is there. And he says, it's important that we keep our team small, only to those that we can trust, but don't get too comfortable. You have a new mission.
The fact that he can use that word, like, it's just, man, now that the cat is out of the bag, it's just you can read all these other layers into it. And I just love it.
Well, and I mean, my thought on reading that was because we have to remember he doesn't care about the Joes. He doesn't care about the Cobras. So my thought reading that is his only intention is I've got to keep this team small so I can manage them.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
So Risk doesn't like to hear that because what Hawk says is don't get too comfortable. You have a new mission. And that's the other thing is he wants to keep them running. So when they become inconvenient, they're easier to dispose of. Let's see. Let me catch up with my notes because I've gotten too caught up in the story and gotten past my notes. Okay. I'm not going to complain about the mask toys again. So I'll skip over that. I wrote down. Okay, here we go. So Hawk is going to split the team up. Everything starts and stops with Energon. That's the key to this war, which, you know, now we know Sartan wants that Energon for himself. So he's going to send Baroness Stalker and Risk to meet with Snowjob, who we have not seen since the Scarlet miniseries. Mm-hmm. They are getting sent to Barikistan, which is a great made-up G.I. Joe comic book name. Mm-hmm. It is. Because you have to have a negative connotation and a Middle Eastern sound, and boom, you've got a made-up G.I. Joe comic book country. But it does make me wonder if maybe this is what leads back to Scarlet and Storm Shadow. If we're bringing Snowjob back in and they're going to the part of the world where he is.
Yeah, because he says, when he's talking about Snowjob, he says he's lost eyes on an undercover agent that might have info we need. And that just
it's
got to be Scarlet.
Right. And then Duke and Clutch, and then he realizes that Duke and Clutch are not there, which, again, I might be reading a little bit too much into this. But the fact that Zartan, like, didn't notice that Duke and Clutch aren't there, does that show maybe a little bit that he's slipping? Mm. Because our first indication of that was the damage he took in that meeting with Destro.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be really fun to see him start to lose his grasp on this team and on the Hawk persona, if that's the direction we're headed. But again, that may be me just looking for things that aren't there. So then we see that Hound, poor old Hound, is crammed into one of the little jail cells that previously held, you know, our Joes back at what, with the Duke miniseries, I guess. And we've got Clutch and Duke hashing it out. And I've got to say, they make some progress over the next two pages between Clutch and Hound, between Hound's explanation of who he is and where he came from, and Clutch's telling the story. I feel like we make more progress in this triangle than I expected. Like, it looks like they're not going to draw this distrust thing out unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Because we get right to the point, Hound explains that there is a leader. Optimus Prime is the leader of the Autobots, and he's the guy, he's the superior officer, he's the guy that we need to connect with, and that Hound can't because his transponder has been blown out ever since he got to Earth. He doesn't even know if Optimus Prime is still alive or knows that Hound is alive or what. No, wait, he does know that Optimus is alive because he's seen him. Doesn't he make a reference? Hang on, let me get back to the dialogue here.
So he doubts that Optimus even knows that Hound
is alive. Clutch showed me footage of his recent battles, so Hound is aware that Optimus is alive, but Optimus doesn't know that Hound is alive, and Duke goes straight to, well, we've got to get your transponder fixed. Not like, well, I can't trust you, and I don't know what, you know, if we got a transponder, that's a whole other problem. Like, it's just, no, we got to get that fixed. So I like that we're moving ahead. We're not going to linger on this.
Mm-hmm.
And Clutch says, I know who can do it, but we're never going to find him again. And of course, we've been reading the issues, so we know things that Clutch does not know. And we're like, well, we know where he is, and we know who you're talking about. And sure enough, we go to a racetrack somewhere, unspecified location. And a guy, this is so good, because the second you see the panel with the crowd, you see this guy sticking out like a sore thumb, clearly a government spook, black suit, black tie, dark glasses. Like, immediately you're like, this idiot's a government agent who's not good at his job. And Matt Tracker is, of course, right behind him because they're arranged a meeting at this racetrack. And this is Agent Walker, which I spent more time, given what happens in the next couple of pages, I spent more time thinking about who Agent Walker might be or might turn out to be than I really should have. Did you guys do anything like that?
Unfortunately, I didn't have time to. Yeah.
I was like, ooh, Agent Walker. Who's a Walker? Who do you think that might be? And then, of course, we get two pages over and it doesn't, it becomes irrelevant. But they have a conversation about what's going on in the world and about Miles Mayhem specifically. So we get a little backstory, and I like that they're setting up Miles Mayhem. And look, I don't remember from Mask what the relationship was, but this Miles Mayhem seems a lot like, Hammer, Justin Hammer.
Yeah. Mm. I believe in the original toy line, they were partners inventing the tech, and then one went evil. And
I think, now that you say that, did Miles Mayhem want to, like, make it all weapons, and Matt Tracker wanted to make it all like defense, or what, you know, whatever.
Right.
The typical two different points of view.
Right. One wanted to do good with it, and one saw money.
Right, right.
It's the X-Men story all over again.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We've seen it many, many times. So we do. We get the backstory that Miles Mayhem basically stole Matt Tracker's technology to pass it off as his own, but and also apparently framed Tracker for something, which is why Matt Tracker is in hiding. But that story's fallen apart. I'm really interested to see that. I would love to see a Mask miniseries that's like a prequel to all of this to really flesh it out. And Tracker is mad. He's like Duke mad. He's ruined my life, stolen from me. I'm still a wanted man. No one believed me when I told them before, and I doubt they would now. Why is this any different?
Because you didn't read Transformers number 26, Matt.
So the agent points, or excuse me, Agent Walker, very important, remember that. Agent Walker points out the world is different. You're not that off the grid. You know about the giant robots and the terrorists with laser guns. This is an opportunity for you to go home. And they want, so the government recognizes Tracker's talents and needs his help against this threat. And then there's a big explosion, and Tracker determines that Walker was followed there. Walker thinks that's impossible, and then Walker gets blown up. Nice two-page spread. There's another one that took me a minute to kind of figure out was a two-page spread. But Tracker dives behind some of the seats, and a massive, massive, like Bigfoot style monster truck with what, like, in retrospect is kind of a familiar style of missiles on top of it, pulls right up in front of Matt Tracker. And somebody off panel says, "You messed up coming out of hiding, Tracker. Pretty big bounty on your head." And Tracker obviously recognizes this person, this voice says, "You came to collect scrap iron." What? And long time buddy, Mayhem says, "Hi." So this is huge because it means Scrap Iron, who we've seen a decent amount throughout these comics, has a relationship with Mayhem and with Tracker, and I guess is a bounty hunter. I mean, we know he works for Destro, mm-hmm. but what does he do in his free time?
Well, that's what
apparently builds monster trucks.
Before we revealed him, I was thinking, who could this be? And I was thinking it might be Major Blood, because
that's what I thought.
Who is the one you kind of think is the lone wolf who's tracking down people? But
And I could see Major Blood in a gigantic monster truck, like overcompensating.
Oh yeah.
This was a great surprise. Brought another character back that we haven't seen in several issues. I don't know that I necessarily want a classified scale monster truck, but at the same time, I kind of do.
But the fact it's so that you cool, said that right? means that you do.
Right. I could be talked into it. Actually, no, what I could be talked into is buying that Batman monster truck that McFarlane made and just pretending it's this. Scrap Iron, big reveal on the last page. And yet another awesome issue that moved the story forward, gave us a lot of great character stuff, grew this world a little bit, grew the lore of this world a little bit. That was great. And I read through this one fast.
Yeah. Yeah, the first time I read through it, it was a very, very quick read. I went back and absorbed it a little bit more later on to catch the things that I missed. But yeah, very enjoyable. We got a few different interesting little stories that are now kind of coming together at the end.
And Noel, I've got to say, as awful and sucky and tragic as it was that your Scrap Iron helmet was stolen, you do have options.
I can get a monster truck.
It's gonna, yeah, get a monster truck. No, you can get a little, a little makeup, scar that pretty face up a little bit, and just wear the Scrap Iron uniform, and you'll be good to go still. So no letters. This is where our review copy ended at page 21. So we didn't get to take a look at the letters or anything else. But we do know the next issue comes out on March the 18th, which is when our review of that issue will be released. Very, so satisfying. A lot of times there'll be a big event like Dreadnought War in comic books, and it'll take a couple issues to kind of get back into gear or to feel like it's got direction again. But this has been, that last issue with our little intermission, and then this issue, we're just constantly full speed ahead with this book, and it's awesome.
Yeah. I like the fact that, last month was kind of a palate cleanser to the point where I had completely forgotten about the Roadblock issue. I think probably because I did not participate in reviewing it. So I only read it the one time, and then I was like, oh, that's right. There was a whole story before this that really relates, that there's nothing that really crosses over into this issue. So we got so much going on.
So as always, we highly recommend you check out the Energon universe. If you have not just the Joe books, but Transformers, Void Rivals, it has all been just fantastic thus far. Noel, why don't you tell us a little bit about The Finest?
The Finest is an international G.I. Joe costuming club raising money for our wonderful charity partner, Canines for Warriors. Check out thefinestcc.com or The Finest Recruitment Center on Facebook if you'd like more information.
And Christian, where can we find that toy photography you do so well?
You can find me on Instagram and Blue Sky under the name Legion Cub.
Our music is by Chris Lodge of Neon Warlords. Be sure and check out Neon Warlords. They're on socials. They're on YouTube. Their music is absolutely fantastic. If you enjoyed our theme song, you will enjoy Neon Warlords. Follow us on Instagram and Blue Sky at Audible Interlude Podcast. And you can catch us live on the Needless Things YouTube channel March the 2nd. Put it on your calendar. And until then, Yo, Joe.
Cobra.
You have been listening to a Needless Things production. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for the very best in toys, movies, music, and pop culture. Until next time, be kind and like what you like.